We're going to begin to take testimony on House Bill 2450. First up, I want to let those folks who might have been here for Senate Bill 283 that it will not be heard. Found out it had constitutional problems. It's off the agenda. With that, I would like to invite Sean, and representing Senator Clarno's office, and Representative Kikori and Representative Backlund to come up and talk to us about House Bill 2450.
Are we in a hearing?
Hmm? A hearing.
Better open the hearing.
Open the public hearing, House Bill 2450. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
I am all about the details, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Can I go first?
No.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair, Senator Deckert. I'm Representative Deborah Kifori, here today to offer my enthusiastic support for House Bill 2450, which we call the Parents of Scholars Bill. House Bill 2450 passed unanimously on the House floor several weeks ago. It has strong bipartisan support, and we believe it will help needy families break out of economic dependency by getting the education they need to move up to better jobs and careers. What House Bill 2450 does is allow post-secondary education to count as an allowable work activity under TANF regulations. You have before you some amendments, the -A10 amendments, and what these amendments do is we amended the bill on the House side to say that the bill would not take effect unless the state of Oregon had the necessary waivers from the federal government. It has come to our attention that there's the possibility that federal law may change to allow this activity to occur, and we don't want to pass the bill and have it be more restrictive than the federal law. So we put this phrase in the A10 amendments so that should Oregon get our waiver and the federal law changes, we can still proceed with the legislation. Thank you very much, and I will, I'm sure there's lots of other people who want to testify on the bill, so I will allow them the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Vic Backlund from District 25, and I'm here to add my support to House Bill 2450. The good representative mentioned that it passed unanimously in the House. That's true. It was a 52-0 vote, and in our Education Committee, it passed also unanimously by a 7-0 vote. So it has yet to find anyone actively opposing this bill. I might add too that in our hearing. Our work session in our public hearing, we had a total of 12 people testify, and every one of those folks was in favor. So I feel really good about a broad-based support. Many of these folks represented organizations, and so I think we're really on the right track. My thought here is just to emphasize, and this is the perfect place to emphasize the importance of education. We have the state of Maine's experience, who we've kind of patterned this after, and it's been a very successful experience. So we think that whatever we can do to encourage mothers on TANF to get an education, we are moving well ahead of where we are now. So in just general, I don't want to go into the details. I know you have those opportunities yet to come, but I want you to know how strongly I feel that this is a good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I, too, would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean Cleave, and I'm here on behalf of Senator Clarno. And I'm privileged to be sitting next to two fine representatives today. I feel a little out of place as a staffer sitting here. But Senator Clarno just wants to emphasize that this bill, to her, makes good policy decision. And believe it or not, there was a time where the bill would have been applicable to a situation that Senator Clarno herself found herself in. So it's a good bill, and we'll leave the details to the rest of the people here today to talk on the bill. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Your testimony. With that, we're going to go back to the top of the list and call Rocky Dome, Cassandra Garrison, Marcia Kelly.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, for the record, Rocky Dahl, Legislative Director, Oregon Student Association, and today I'm representing also the Oregon Students of Color Coalition, and in support of House Bill 2450 and the efforts that OSOC and the other organizations, constituencies, and citizens who have been working on this bill. Post-secondary education is essential in breaking the cycle of poverty, creates greater stability for families, and ultimately develops Oregon's economy. Some of Oregon's lowest income families are ready and willing to get back into the workforce and can achieve financial independence if they're given the opportunity to do so. House Bill 2450 would provide that option and aid many low income families in earning a degree. This option will make Oregon's TANF program more effective and will result in long-term savings and economic returns for our state. House Bill 2450 will increase access to education for those TANF recipients that are willing to participate in this allowable option. Currently, caring for children and working to fulfill the requirements to receive TANF leaves little time or resources for a parent who is willing to get back to work and willing to get an education. 35% of TANF recipients return to public assistance because of a lack of training or education. So allowing some of these TANF recipients to receive an associate's or bachelor's degree would greatly reduce the likelihood that they will return to public assistance. It would increase their earning power as much as 75%, and the chances increase that their children and their families will also eventually obtain college degrees. The Parents of Scholars option will leave a lot of responsibility to these participants. It will require that they find an accessible institution and be accepted. It will not provide additional money or financial aid to cover their educational costs, and it will ensure that the students maintain satisfactory progress once they're enrolled. House Bill 2450 will help better serve TANF recipients who are ready and willing to take the initiative to educate themselves and help provide more financial stability for themselves and families. Poverty and the lack of educational opportunities is a problem that is facing urban, suburban, and rural Oregon. It affects women, men, and their dependent children. It affects people of all color and creeds in our state. House Bill 2450, the Parents of Scholars Bill, will show that the state wants to open doors for people of all communities receiving TANF and committed to an education. Thanks for your time, and on behalf of the Oregon Students of Color Coalition and the Oregon Student Association, we urge that you vote yes on House Bill 2450. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you, Rocky.
Good afternoon, Chair Starr and members of the Senate Education Committee. I am the public policy manager of the Oregon Food Bank. I rise in support of House Bill 2450. Additionally, I have a personal story that I would like to share and add into the official testimony. Cassandra Garrison, Oregon Food Bank.
Thank you.
Okay. In March of this year, I signed purchasing papers on my very first home. And I'm a new homeowner, and it's an amazing event because 14 years ago on Valentine's Day, I was in a shelter with my daughter, Alexandra. It's been a long, difficult journey for me personally, but my life has come full circle. See? In 1989, after devastating losses, I found myself homeless with a baby. While I was in Westside Women's Shelter, the family advocates encouraged me and assisted me in applying for public benefits. However, most importantly, and the most important thing the family advocates encouraged me to do was apply to attend community college. However, I ended up going to Portland Community College in Sylvania, and once I moved from my shelter into my Section 8 housing in my apartment, I enrolled full-time at PCC Sylvania, where I was awarded scholarships and child care grants. My daughter attended college with me and was on campus with me. I attained Associate of Applied Science in Civil Engineering in 1992, and in 1992, I was awarded a full scholarship that was privately funded, and I became the second Nancy Riles Scholar in the state of Oregon. I graduated in 1996 with a Bachelor of Science in Sociology with an emphasis in community development and land use planning, and I have a certificate in urban studies. I promptly applied for the graduate program in Portland State's public administration. And while the last 2 years of my college career, I was accepted to do work study for the City of Portland Bureau of Housing and Community Services. By the time I graduated in 1996, I was employed full-time and was taking classes in my graduate program. In 1997, I was hired by the Oregon Food Bank as a community outreach coordinator as federal welfare reform was being implemented. And in 1999 to 2000, I received the Award of Achievement in recognition for combining full-time employment with my academic achievement. Some will say that I'm an exception, an overachiever, and with the ability to overcome the odds that were placed in front of me, but I'm not an exception. I'm an example of what's possible. I'm an example for myself, and I consider myself a good role model for my daughter, Alexandra. She's attending Benson. My family and the people that I come in contact every day on a daily basis, I serve as a constant reminder to those around me that success can happen for real people. I was given the opportunity and the tools to move from poverty into a very productive life. Education is the key out of poverty. Education changed the outcome for my personal life and my life of my child. It broke the cycle of poverty. Education opens the door to a better future. In 1995, I left welfare forever. No more state, no more federal subsidies of any kind. Today I work full-time for the Oregon Food Bank as the public policy manager, a new promotion I just got. And in 2002, I co-founded and funded the Poverty Action Team, a nonprofit working in the low-income communities to move families out of poverty, resolve crisis, create hope, and discover opportunities for economic stability through self-advocacy and education. And in 2002, I started my own consulting business, Systems Integration Management, and I do consulting and I provide community education and outreach statewide to nonprofits which serve low-income families. By having a college education, the state of Oregon has benefited dramatically by the increased contribution to the economy. My donation of my time, my passion to the most vulnerable populations, and my independence from public assistance. Without the opportunity to obtain a college education, I would still be struggling to keep my head above water. I would still be using public benefits. I would be subsidizing my low-income work, as many low-income welfare moms do. Oregon has the highest unemployment rate and the highest incidence of hunger in the nation. This bill begins to address Oregon's needs. Parents of Scholars, House Bill 2450, uses the existing TANF program to improve the opportunities of those seeking financial stability. The Parents of Scholars option would empower welfare recipients, just like me, to earn a degree and thus achieve self-sufficiency. I ask you to support House Bill 2450. It's good for low-income families, and it's good for Oregon. And as you review this House Bill 2450, I want you to consider this quote, which means a lot to me personally. I do not say that all men are equal in their ability, in their character, or in their motivation, but I say they should be equal in their chance to develop their character, their motivation, and their abilities. They should be given a fair chance to develop all the talents which they have, which is the basic assumption and presumption of this democracy of ours. And that was John F. Kennedy in 1963. I thank you for listening to me today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just a comment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your testimony was very moving. And, you know, we debate, and we do it right now, the role of government and whether, certainly in the state right now, we're at a real, I guess, a turning point. And I think your story provides an example, at least for myself, that government can play a proactive role and a hand up and helping citizens achieve freedom and fulfilling their potential. So,
and when I look back on my life, it was funding from the city, from the county, from the state, from the federal government, and from a private donor. I'm not a self-made person. You know, I'm a product of when we funded public benefits programs, when we believed in moving people not into low-wage work, but moving them out of poverty. That's the biggest thing I see in my career was, you know, the goal for me and everyone around me at that point in my life was to move me to a point of economic stability. And I'd like to see that for the 100 or 200 women or men that are able to become a part of this program. You're welcome.
Chair Starr and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the lobbyist for the Women's Rights Coalition. Our organizational members include the American Association of University Women of Oregon, the Oregon Women's Political Caucus, the Older Women's League, Delta Kappa Gamma, Oregon National Organization for Women, and the Salem YWCA. I list them down there so I don't forget them. And I'm also here in addition to the coalition speaking for AUW, which has about 2,500 members statewide in all areas, Pendleton, Lake County, and Tillamook. We're very, very supportive of this bill because of the story that you just heard. And that story could be a man or a woman. Under this bill, about 185 people might be able to use this without federal legislation if but we would really like to see the federal legislation passed, too. I know that Senator Olympia Snow, a Republican from Maine, has been very active on the national basis and has been very supportive of the Maine program. Rocky alluded to the Maine program, and let me just give you a few statistics and be the money person here. The Maine program, 90% of the participants who continue and graduate out of the Maine program, which is really basically education and doesn't allow for some of the other things that this bill would do, 90% of them do not return to TANF benefits, the temporary assistance for needy families. And the people who are employed in that program are averaging $4 an hour more in their wages than people who are not using the educational benefits of the Maine program that's the Parents as Scholar. So if you just take that $4 difference and multiply it for 90% of that 185 that would be covered for Oregon, that's 166 people. And over a year, it's incredible. It would add taxable income, not their total income, but it would add almost $1.3 million in taxable income to the state of Oregon. Not a bad deal, I don't think. And so there are benefits for the state. Not only are people then not receiving public assistance, but they're actually contributing more into the economy than if they're put into minimum wage jobs. So the Women's Rights Coalition, who's been advocating for over 30 years, wants to really support this bill and will do anything to get it passed.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. We have Marcy Hoven, Martin Taylor. Okay, who am I missing? And Bev Logan.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Marie Hooven. I'm the Executive Director of Children First for Oregon. It's a tough last name, and I have bad handwriting, so my apologies. On behalf of Children First, which is the state's leading voice for more than 850,000 children in Oregon, we enthusiastically support this bill as well. It's an opportunity for the 15% of our children who live in poverty to see their families rise to a more stable position due to greater financial stability of their parents and their parents' ability to provide the basic supports and necessities for them and their children. As the previous speakers and what witnesses have talked about, Maine has just seen tremendous success with this program. And in a climate where we're trying so hard to still do good things for our children and our most vulnerable populations, and it's really difficult to do that, this is an opportunity I think that the legislature certainly can't pass up. It is an opportunity to allow people to move up and out and stay out of a situation where they rely on public services and contribute back again, as Ms. Garrison so eloquently discussed her own situation. So thank you so much for hearing this bill.
Thank you.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Law Center. The Oregon Law Center provides legal support for folks who are often in a situation where they're under very serious financial constraints. And I normally come before committees to convince them to pass legislation or defeat it, and there's really no convincing necessary here. This bill has yet to find an opponent. But I do want to do something other than just add to the choir, which is I want you to take a moment and recognize that this is a pretty exceptional bill in this process. At a time in the state where people who are poor are experiencing so much stress from the decisions that we've been forced to make in this legislature and simply what's happening in the economy, at a time when most of their understandings of the state legislature are about services that they've had that they're losing, and at a time where people are so cynical about government and so used to seeing Democrats and Republicans fight, you get this bill like a beacon of hope for people. This is one good thing that's going to come out of this session for people who need some support and assistance right now. It's an opportunity for folks to do what Cassandra Garrison has done and truly change their situation. And we've done it with the four caucus leaders as the chief sponsors of the bill, and we've done it without opposition, and we've done it in the most difficult times that Oregon's faced in a long time. And I think you should be very proud of this work, and I think this legislature should hold this up to the public as an example of what we can do. Thank you.
I'm Bev Logan. I live in Southeast Portland, and I'm going to be your least prepared and least able to speak publicly person so far. I wanted to come here today because this is about my life. I moved to Portland 13 years ago to finish my education with my two daughters, and so I have a lot of experience in knowing what it's like to be a single parent and a single parent in poverty and a single parent in poverty trying to pursue an education. And I know that I had a lot of benefits. I think that probably among women in that category, I feel like I was probably one of the best off because I wasn't dealing with any health issues. I didn't have mental health issues. I didn't have addiction issues. I had two healthy children that didn't have any learning problems. I had a strong, supportive extended family, and I had a really good educational foundation under me to begin with. And I know that there's a lot of people who simply don't have all those benefits. And as well, gifted as I feel like I was, it was still a heck of a struggle, and it just routinely required 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night. And that was with all the benefits that I feel like I had that others don't. And I feel like there's direct benefits to the state for providing the means for people to pursue an education, to get out of poverty, and to help their families to break out of cycles of poverty, perhaps. And I think that those get talked about a lot. They'll get jobs, they'll pay taxes, they'll not depend on state services, but I think that there are other things that don't get recognized a lot. From my own education, I feel like I gained the ability to understand so many things about my world, about the institutions that I come into contact with, about my children's development, about relationships, just things to know about my world, about myself, that I feel like gave me some hope of being able to control some of the circumstances of my life. And I feel like that's something that when you're in poverty, you often just don't have hope like that, because you just feel constantly battered about, like just constantly perched on the edge of catastrophe. And I haven't relied on state assistance at all for the last probably about 10 years. And most of what I needed was food stamps. And for short periods, I needed more assistance. But I feel like my daughters have benefited tremendously from the fact that I was able to pursue an education, and that they that was a part of their everyday lives, and that they got the experience of knowing what it is to have to study and to have to plan your time. And I've done a lot of tutoring of kids, at-risk kids and foster kids, and I know that there's a lot of kids who simply don't have somebody at home that can even help them with homework, or that know what those sort of micro skills are that go into succeeding in school. It's not just about being smart. It's about knowing how to manage your time and knowing how to what it takes to study or to prepare for a test or to set time aside to get your homework done. And I feel like those are benefits that my kids got because they were constantly exposed to my own education, and the fact that I had to learn that helped me to teach them those skills as well. And I think that translated to a lot of their friends that came over, and it certainly helped me, I think, to be a better tutor to the kids that I have tutored, as well as to mentor them in some things. I guess I'll say my kids both are, they've both done well in school. They're both, one is finishing her second year at Oregon State, the other's finishing her third year at Portland State. And they both they contribute to their community. They do volunteer work. They don't use drugs. They're not having babies. I just feel pretty secure and pretty hopeful about their lives, but I don't think that they will ever probably be in a situation where they're ever going to be reliant on any, you know, state assistance. Besides that, I feel like, and they have, you know, they've had jobs and they do contribute, you know, economically, but they do a lot with for their community, and I think that they're good influences on their friends as well. I don't know what else I wanted to say. Maybe that's it. I mean, I guess I just feel like there's not a better investment that could be made up front in providing people an avenue to self-sufficiency, and also for a lot of people it's breaking cycles that have more cost to the state than just financial assistance to families when people are incarcerated or they have untreated mental health problems or whatever. There's a lot of problems that come out of poverty that are so much more effectively dealt with up front by preventing people from going into some kind of spirals in the first place. And I think that education is just the most obvious way of dealing with that for generations to come. And so I encourage you to do whatever you can do to make that accessible for women and parents to pursue their education.
Thank you. You get remarkable answer.
Thanks.
Any questions? Thank you very much. We're going to close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2450. We have the dash 10 amendments. I would entertain a motion to move the dash 10 amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the dash 10 amendments.
Senator Farioli has moved the dash 10 amendments to House Bill 2450. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
House Bill 2450 is amended. It's been moved by Senator Farioli to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator
Farioli.
Aye.
Senator
Moore. Aye.
Vice Chair Chair Starr?
Aye.
Having received the required majority, House Bill 2450 is amended, has been moved to the Senate floor. We'll ask Senator Farno to carry. That closes the work session for the public hearing on Senate Bill 370. Senate Bill 370 is the guts and stuff.
Guts and stuff.
We have amendments to replace the bill. The bill is not ready to move. We will take testimony. And we have a sign-up sheet here with a number of individuals who want to talk. I would encourage you to be brief. George Doddington, Sandra Bishop, and Richard Ubez.
Excuse me.
Good afternoon, Chair Starr, members of the committee. Thank you very much for hearing us this afternoon. I'll give a brief presentation to start with. For the record, my name is Sandra Bishop, and I'm here today representing the Driving School Association of Oregon. And on my left, I have Mr. George Doddington from Oregon Driver Training Institute. And on my right, Richard Ubell, the president of the Driving School Association of Oregon. I'll make just a couple remarks to begin with. Let me tell you first what the Driving School Association of Oregon represents. 50% of the licensed driving schools in the state and 75% of the driving schools that are offering driver education programs that meet the graduated driver's license requirements. Just to set a little bit of a context for what we're asking for today, in 1999, the 99 legislature passed the graduated driver licensing law, and I'd like to hand in a statistical rendition of what it's done in the way of affecting the safety of teen drivers. This is a very successful program, and we're here today to address one small part of it. Just to do a little bit of background on the problem, there was the, as I said, the graduated driver's licensing law was put into effect. It came into effect in January of 2001. And they also in 2001, a task force was put together, the Instructor Standards Implementation Task Force. And the recommendations for that task force came out in, I believe it was July of 2002. I think most of you have this in the background material. So now what we're looking at today, we're facing a bit of a bottleneck in getting the instructors trained who are doing the driver's education. And that's what we're here today asking you to help us with. The Dash 3 Amendment is a very straightforward, simple legislative change, which actually puts into statute the legislative intent that the instruction materials that are now presented only in one university course, that these materials be the standardized materials, same materials, but they be allowed to be studied on an individual basis. So that's what we're asking for in the amendments. And just to lay to rest any speculation, Dash 1 and Dash 2 were simply renditions of the Dash 3, so there are no other mysterious amendments out there. And basically what the problem with the course is that you're taking professional people that have a lot of experience in some cases and having them sit through an 80 to 100 hour university course. So that's what we're trying to get around. The solution is simply this legislative directive to allow it to be done as a self-study under a mentor. Some of it has to be done with another individual because you can't really study behind the wheel driving techniques on your own. So that's the reason for a mentor in there. And we're continuing, the association is continuing to work with the Traffic Safety Division and the department to, you know, make sure that all of the details of it will be worked out in administrative rule. And you might hear the department say, well, you don't need legislation, you need administrative rule. We need both. It's been over 2 years and in the making, and there's been ample opportunity, at least in the last year, to put this into rule, but it hasn't been put into rule, even though the recommendation's been out there. The other thing is there's a deadline. When I talk about the bottleneck, there's a deadline of September 2004 for all the instructors to get trained. So that's why. And then after that point, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to run a once-in-a-while university course to train people. It will severely hamper the training of the instructors because you won't have a critical mass anymore. It'll be difficult to get enough people. They've already canceled some of the courses. And they are offering them now in other geographic locations around the state, which is an issue, but still it would be better to have people study on their own with a mentor. And then we have no problem with testing. Everyone should go through the same testing. So this is not about testing. This is about studying to be tested. So thank you. And Mr. Dottington would like to make a short presentation. Thanks. And then we're here for questions.
Chairman Starr, members of the committee, George Dottington, president of Oregon Driver Training Institute, appreciate your allowing me to testify on this issue. The intent of this proposed amendment is to ensure that all driver education providers will be able to process new and current instructors through the division-approved course requirements individually when and where they are needed in a timely manner throughout the state. The requirement of on-site university or college courses are not practical in terms of availability, cost, time commitment, and sustainability. The current courses being offered have a minimum enrollment level of 8 students. One was canceled last month due to low enrollment, 4 students. There is often only one or two instructors in need of training at any given time, especially for commercial driving schools and rural school districts. Without the availability of timely instructor training on location, the availability of driver education programs at these locations will be threatened. Competency can be determined by standardized comprehensive written test and driving evaluation to be given to all instructors completing a division-approved course administered by TSD or DMV. ODOT TSD has stated their intent to propose legislation to require mandatory driver education in the 2005 legislative session. If passed, this will dramatically increase the demand for driver education courses. This proposed amendment will allow providers to accommodate the increased demand in a timely manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that testimony.
Chair Starr, I also would like to hand in a fiscal impact analysis that we've done, not particularly on the cost of the bill, but the cost of not having the training more readily available.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just here to add my 2 cents worth. My name is Richard Ubell, Driving School Association of Oregon. Also, I have a school in Springfield, Eugene area, professional driving school. But I'm available for questions. I have my testimony written. I don't think you really want me to go through it all if you don't need to. But
you have copies of the testimony for the committee?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, you can take some.
Any questions?
We just want it simplified and streamlined.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for hearing us.
Wendy Reed, is it?
Yes.
You signed up to testify. Kay Heaton? No.
I'd like to rely on the testimony of my colleagues and not speak.
And not come forward at this time. Anyone else want to testify?
I would like to ask.
Yes, please come forward.
I'm Kathy Heaton from Sears Driving School, and I'm the manager of the driving school in both Portland and Vancouver and in Spokane in the past. My real concern of being here today and been involved in this whole process is what had happened to me in Spokane. As a manager in Spokane, one of the things that I always obviously have to do is hire instructors and get them certified. The requirements in Washington State got to the point where it was impossible for me to hire instructors. One of the requirements in the state of Washington was the fact that they had to be a certified teacher and then have the coursework for driver's ed. The coursework was the difficult part And that's my concern with what's happening right now, is that I was not able to find a teacher who had the coursework that was available to teach our program. I ended up closing our Spokane market, and I've never been able to reopen it. I had contacted the university in Washington. I contacted the traffic safety coordinator, who is now our coordinator here in Washington, John Harvey. I asked, he had the ability to give me instructors and send me instructors. I wrote a letter to every teacher who had the certification in the state, offering them a job. And because of the requirements and how difficult it was, I had an instructor who was a behind-the-wheel instructor who was able to get the training if the training was available. And 2 years in a row, he went to John Harvey, who is our coordinator now here in Oregon, and he offered the classes, and he canceled both years because of lack of enrollment of the classes. So my teacher ended up quitting, and then I ended up closing the market. And I'm very concerned that here in Washington, Oregon, that does not happen, that we have the ability to train instructors. All of us are in full agreement with the training. It needs to be. We need training. The instructors need training. They need updating. We support that totally, 100%. But what we want is the ability to train and get them certified without waiting a year to get them done. And that's where we'll lose, and that's where the commercial school is going to be really affected, along with the public schools. And one of our goals is that there'll be mandatory driver's ed here in Oregon, because driver's ed can help reduce the collisions. The things we're doing with the GDL has already, as you see, has already made a great reduction in collisions and in deaths in the teens. And our goal is to continue this process, and more training for instructors and more updates for all of us is a good thing, but the process needs to be streamlined, and we need to be able to have a method of training using the same material that they want us to have, and have us be able to give the training ourselves and then test out. And that's why I'm here, to support this. And I really need to have you consider this, that there's a better way. Have it on CD. Have it in print. Have a way that we can give the training, test out, and get everybody updated. And not after 2004 be very difficult for us to get a classroom and get certification. And that's our concern. Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Appreciate your experience. This bill, in my opinion, is not ready. We will perhaps bring it back, but at the moment we're not going to have a work session on the bill. So I do really appreciate you coming and giving us your benefit of your expertise, and your testimony is very much appreciated. We'll be talking with the department and with Sandra and see if there's something we can do to move this legislation. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 370 and adjourn the Senate Education Committee. Thank you.